When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome, everyone, to Escaped Reality Podcast with Justine.
And Geneva. Hi, friends. Special interview coming your way with Tiff from the Ultimatum Queer Love on Netflix. We're excited. Hope you guys enjoy the conversation. We did our usual shit, which is ask a bunch of inappropriate questions and get where we got. All right, guys, enjoy the interview. Obviously, follow us on all the places. Let us know you're listening. Tag us on Instagram, Escaped Reality Podcast. And we'll be back. We love you. Enjoy the interview. We are joined by a special guest today, Tiff from Ultimatum Queer Love on Netflix. Tiff, how you doing today?
Hello, I'm doing great. How are you ladies doing?
Great. Doing good. We're excited to talk to you. Yes. We loved the show. We were talking to you before we started recording. We blew through it. We're excited to talk to you about it. How long has it been since you were actually on the show? And then we're going to get into like intro questions.
Yeah. Oh God. So we filmed September of 2021 to November of 2021. So it's been about a year and 9 months, year and 10 months since filming started / ended. So it's been a while. It's been a long time.
It's felt like forever. Yeah. That's wild to have to relive it so long after like you already went through it. You know, that's gotta be a weird experience.
Yeah. That's definitely when everything aired. I mean, for Netflix, most stuff takes anywhere between like a year and maybe like 3-4 months. Right. But we were actually supposed to be released February 14th. This past year, but they released The Perfect Match instead. They saved us for Pride, so they pushed us back like another 5-6 months. Living under a rock like sucked, right? And then when you get over something, then it's like ripping open the band-aid all again for the public to gore off of.
The Perfect Match, I don't even recall that show.
Yeah, it did hit number one on Netflix. It's from the same producers as ours, Love is Blind, all that. It's like previous reality Netflix stars that are then going on a dating show.
Oh, I remember that. Right. Okay. Yeah, and did 2 months feel like 2 years, or did it go by super fast, like a blink of an eye?
It went by kind of slow, I think. Yeah, it did go by pretty slow.
You had a rough experience, though. We'll get there. Yeah. Okay. Before we get in, we have
I have to say, though, I'm so happy you reached out to us, because I really felt like we would connect with Tiff out of anybody on the show. And you are so happy and go lucky. And I was really rooting for you. So,
I appreciate
I'm happy. It feels like kismet that you reached out to
It's funny you were saying that, because I was in Marshall's today. And I was like at the checkout lane, and this mother and daughter, like, you know, there's like, you know, 7, 8, 9. So they're the register next to me. Like, this older lady like literally leaned over to me and whispered at me. They're like, "I was rooting for you the whole time." And I was just like, and I leaned back and I was like, "Thanks."
Really great. That's now awesome. I gotta go check out. Yeah. I love that. All right. A few random questions for you. First, like, what's your favorite thing you're watching or favorite reality show? Like, do you dabble in television? If so, what do you like to watch?
Yeah. So I wasn't a huge reality TV person until COVID happened and I watched Love is Blind 1. Then I was like, okay, I see this. Like, this is pretty fucking cool. This is pretty genuine. And then honestly, I've dabbled into Love is Blind, a lot of Netflix stuff. Maybe I'm biased. I don't know. Like, Too Hot to Handle.
They brainwashed you.
Yeah. And then I did a little bit of like 90 Day Fiance. And then a little bit of Married at First Sight. I have not gotten onto The Bachelor or anything like that. Like I haven't, I haven't jumped on that train. I feel like I'm so many seasons behind. I just don't have enough time to like catch up to all that. But I'm trying to think of like other like reality shows. I think, what is it called? Oh my gosh, I'm having a brain fart. That one where you're in jail, where it's undercover in jail.
Oh, 60 Days In.
Yeah, I've never watched that. Yeah, I started watching that for a while last year. Sort of got
my husband
that.
Loves that show. It's like, yeah, that show's wild. Like the psychological aspect of that show is crazy, because like you really do see how people, once they're in there, they like start to become like part of the jail crew, you know?
They have to. So like, I guess protect themselves or be, you know, part, like, I guess top dog, as they say, and not
Did you ever watch Jailbirds?
No.
With the girls talking in the toilets. Okay.
Oh my God, please watch that. It's on Netflix. Oh, they start entire relationships through the bowl, they call it. So they're like in a high rise prison where like the toilet goes through all the floors. You need to watch it. And they talk to each other. They're like, yo, I met him on the bowl. And they're like, yeah, you gotta, you'd love it.
Okay, great. I'm going to add that to my playlist.
It's crazy.
All right. This is an even odder question, which is, how many pillows do you sleep with at night?
If you include my cat, I think like five.
Oh, five. You're in Geneva's world. Yeah. I can see him. You can count him if that's your bed or your couch.
I didn't ask for her to be a pillow, but she always ends up in my bed. And then I like just, I don't know, I roll over and then she gets mad at me. And I was like, that's just complete rejection. Like, why are you getting mad at me for being in my space? And then I have to also have a pillow between my legs because I'm a side sleeper.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. All right. Do you sleep with your dog too?
Yeah.
Is your dog in your bed?
No, actually, because she's she's now 14. Actually, this is her right here. Let's see her. Hold on. She's
look how good she's doing. She looks healthy.
Sweet. Yeah, she's good. Knock on wood. She's almost 14, so her arthritis can't get her off bed anymore.
Oh.
But she's actually 14. She's a loner, you know. She's like has to be like the lead of the pack, so she actually prefers to be like alone, like
doing her own thing
and ready to get going if she has to whoop some ass.
I know, exactly. Yeah,
I saw feeding her. Is it him or her?
Dog. Yeah.
I saw you feeding her chicken on the patio of some when you're yesterday with the fork. So she's got a nice life.
Oh yeah.
I cyber stalk you. She's like, what do you mean?
Yeah. I know. I was thinking of like, I have a patio right here. I was like,
oh,
damn. I was like,
she's watching you.
Holy shit. I need to leave now. Bye. I'm kidding. No.
She's gone.
All the way down from Vista.
I promise this was on Instagram.
Yeah. No. Yeah. We went to like a little spot in Hillcrest, Baja Betty's, so I always get her like a side of chicken whenever we go out.
Because Geneva watched Housewives, and one of the housewives the other day went on a walk with her dog, and she let the dog, they were on a hot walk. They pour the water in the bowl, and then the dog drank the water. You know how dogs get all slobbery. Then she drank the water from the dog's bowl after it. And
how do you feel about
that? You're an ultimate dog lover. And we were like, that's disgusting. So Yeah,
like I'll share a fork with my dog, right? Or like I'll get kisses from my dog.
Yeah.
I've like, you know, like little things like that. But that's like straight up tongue swapping at that point. Like,
it's like motto, drinking.
Like, yeah. It.
Yeah. Get some good worms in your tummy that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm sure Shiloh, the way I look at it is my dog, she's so bougie. She needs filtered water like all the time. And I feel like if I were to go on a hot girl walk and get very sweaty and down water and get slobber all over and everything, and then I offered her the rest of the bowl, she would be like,
no, she'd be like, get the fuck out of here.
About? Get the fuck out of here. Bring me like, bring me Brita.
Where's my feet?
Where's my purified water?
Here's my goddamn Fiji.
That's good. All right, last question before we get into our show questions, which is, you live in San Diego, what's your favorite restaurant in San Diego? Somebody's coming for a weekend, where they gotta go?
I like, you know, for me it's not just the taste of the food, it's the ambiance as well.
Have
you ever been to Lumi in downtown? It's this rooftop sushi bar.
Ooh, we have not. I don't think I have.
I have no life, so no.
It's called Lumi. It's a downtown, it's right in like in Gaslamp headquarters. Yeah. It's a rooftop bar, but I love all the vibes. I like sexy, low lighting, lounge vibes. And they just have all low lighting heat lamps, but then they have like all the neon lights like underneath of your seat and just they play like, like sexy EDM/hip-hop-ish kind of music. Like, I don't know. Sushi's an 8 out of 10, probably a 7 out of 10.
Okay. But the vibes are immaculate. Okay. All right. Good.
Vibes are immaculate.
Okay.
What's your favorite fast food?
Oh yes. Fast food.
Ooh, fast food. You know what?
You eat it.
You know, so I'm actually vegan. That makes sense. Don't worry, it's not my religion. I don't shove it down anyone's throats, unless if they want Impossible Burger.
I was going to say you didn't talk about it like 7,000 times on the show, so you're definitely not one of those vegans. So I think that's good.
No, well, I probably did, to be honest, but they
like cut it.
You only deal with one clip. They do. There is a scene where I'm in the dating thing, and I'm like talking to Yoli, and I was like. Like I can't handle stuff. Like I just can't handle if my significant other were to eat a raw juicy steak in front of me, like bleeding out its like ears. I can't handle that. But anything else goes. So with that being said, have you ever heard of plant power?
Yes, I have.
I love that, but the things they put in there, I don't know what it is to match with fast food yumminess.
Right.
It comes at a cost of like shitting on the toilet for like 3 days, but it's totally worth it.
Okay.
Cleaning you out. It's that sunflower oil.
Yeah. So to transition to your experience on the show, how did you decide, like, how did you guys decide to go on the show? Was it a collaborative decision? Did one person, were you approached? Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, I was approached by a casting producer. Never thought about being on reality TV ever in my life. So they approached me and out of nowhere, they were like, hey, my name is yada yada. I am a casting producer. We've covered shows such as Married at First Sight and Love is Blind. We're looking for XYZ criteria. One's ready to get married. One's not so much. We're looking for queer relationships. And, you know, like just a couple other minor things. And then they're like, it looks like, cause I had pictures of my ex at the time, you know, like, I'm guessing this is your person. Would you be cool to like, would you be interested? Does this fit the bill? Something you'd be interested in? So believe it or not, I actually turned her down at first. And I was like, yeah, no, we're just not like really in a good place. Like, I don't like, you know, we haven't talked about marriage in a while, blah, blah, blah. I kind of just shoved it off. But me being an Aquarius and a very curious person, I just actually was like, for the next day and a half, I just was talking to her about like random things. Like, what's it like being a casting producer? Like, you know, like what is a casting producer? Like, cause I, you know, I didn't know any of this entertainment world. Like I just moved to Southern California. I don't even know what a casting producer does, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. They ruin people's lives. They stroll in.
Yeah, exactly. So, right. And it's just interesting because I think a lot of people are thirsty to be on television. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I brushed, I think maybe it had something to do with it. I don't know. Maybe good first impressions, right? Because I brushed it off and I was just talking about everything but TV show for the next day and a half to this poor woman. And so then like, I guess it's kind of like, you know, she's like, hey, this person might have a whatever they're looking for, right? A personality, I don't know, can talk without. Who knows? But anyway, like a day and a half later, she was like, so what's the reason why you feel like you don't like fit this bill or like why you don't feel like you guys are good for this? I was like, to be honest, we're in such a tumultuous relationship right now. We're actually on a break. We haven't, you know, talked about marriage or anything about that for like the last like 6 to 7 months. I was like, we really suck at communication, but I feel like if we would learn to communicate better, then we could go on the show. But I was like, but we're just not in a good place right now. And then she messages me back and she goes, you know what? I think that's what we're looking for.
The messier the better.
AKA toxicity. And we keep in mind, season one was not out yet. There was no The Ultimatum. There was nothing for us to look at. It was not called The Ultimatum. There wasn't anything. We were called the San Diego Queers Couple Project. So we didn't have anything.
That was a name.
Yeah. Or, like, you know, just until a placeholder. But we didn't have anything else to go off of. So, you know, we knew it was going to be drama and this and that, but I was like, oh, well, they've done Love is Blind. At that point, it was only Love is Blind season one, which was like genuine. And they've done Married at First Sight. So I'm like, I don't think this is going to be like a Jerry Springer like show. And it, you know, when it, the whole experience was way more emotional than, you know, I would say that it portrays on TV. I mean, obviously they have to have drama. But when, so that, when we wrapped filming in 2021 of November, December, January, February, March, April came around, season one came out on Netflix. It went like busted into the number one spot within like 3 days. It was on like the top, I think in the top 10 for like almost a month. And, we just looked at each other. We were like all sitting on the couch and we're like, what the fuck did we actually sign up for? Like, what is this? This isn't us. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
same a lot of people,
not characters, same people, same shit, same plot, same, you know, 8 weeks, you know, the different things, the trial marriages, the this, the that. It was just with different people. And we looked at each other and we're like, oh God. Like, if we thought we were like semi okay, not at all. And there was no going back. Like, we could
this
die.
Already done it. This is before. Yeah. Oh, this was after you had already filmed it. No, this is before
she filmed. Yeah.
So
after she filmed,
so
season one came out.
April of 2022, the show.
Oh, that's after it aired. Okay.
Yep. And we filmed back to back for season one. They picked up their entire production basically
and just came down
and just went to San Diego and filmed.
Was half nightmares? Were like single people, half the couples, like, were you guys all local to San Diego or they brought people in?
No. So, in the lesbian world, it's a very small world, and to be all in the same city, if there were 10 people in that room,
you would have already known each other.
And not only that, I probably would have dated a third of them, to be quite honest. So, I mean, it just wouldn't have worked out.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
They actually started their search in Seattle and they realized really quickly that they need to expand. And so, yeah, we got, you know, Yoli Mala from Seattle. You have Xander and Vanessa from Hawaii. And then, yeah, like, you know, Lexi and Ray from OC, and we just kind of are spread out a little bit.
Okay. And we were wondering about the format of the show, like the two trial marriages. Do you feel like it would be different if you flip-flop them? So like if you did a trial with your partner and then transition, like, do you feel like the way that it worked kind of set you up to be like, you were kind of like grown, you know, you did your growing in your first marriage and then you popped in like, ooh, I'm ready to make this work. Like, did you feel like that had any impact on how you felt about the flow of the show?
That's a really good question. Cause I actually never thought about that. I guess the way, looking back on it now, I like the way it was formatted because I feel like if we would have went, let's just say we dated, you know, like the 10 days of strict dating, and then we would have went to her partners first, I don't think that would have been a significant enough time. And that's a big reason why, you know, Mildred and I chose to sign up for this, is because we never really had to deal with third parties. We knew that that would be a possibility. We weren't really banking on that. We were pretty solid with each other. But it was the communication. That's the biggest thing. But so we had to be open to the idea of it. Right. But I feel like if it would have been flip-flopped, it just wouldn't have been enough time for us to like be apart from each other, to kind of see contrast with someone else. So that's a really good question. I never thought of that. That would be something I need to, I don't know, wrap myself in six pillows or five pillows and
see how you feel.
Cause I feel like Xander and Yoli, if it was flip flopped, they were one of the couples I definitely would have thought would have stayed together if it was the end of the show.
Oh, like
they both seemed emotionally trashed after. And they missed each other, but then they kind of got back in the swing of things with their partner.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that would have changed the trajectory of things. I'm trying to look go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Are you a jealous person? Everybody stayed pretty calm. I just don't know how there's not more fighting and name calling and craziness.
So actually, am I a jealous person? I would have, if I'm confident in the relationship, I'm not. But if someone gives me reasons to be, probably that's not the relationship I should be in, but I can be if it's provoked. Believe it or not, it was the cocktail. And I'd say again, like you, everyone seemed calmer and composed and everything, but it's, that's the storyline, the narrative of like what they're following. And there's, you know, as you know, like doing reality TV, there's so much that's shown, but not like actually condensed. And you only see 1% of it. During the whole dating period, like we don't have phones, we don't have anything. We're filming 16 hours a day going on dates. You know, we'd be boiled down to two people by the end of 10 days, each going on dates about 20 hours with them. The first or second night of where you see the cocktail parties where all of us first get together during the dating period and we really all talk to each other. That night, it's not on film, but that night, I actually got really insecure about Xander and Mildred. Xander was like, I guess got really drunk and was just like straight up hitting on Mildred in front of me, but like would actually like, I was talking to Mildred and Xander like boxed me out, literally went like this and boxed me out to talk to her. And I was like trying to keep my composure because I'm like, man, if you know, I'm cool as shit with Xander now. We've all talked about it. It's fine. But I'm like, if I was out like not behind cameras right now and not this, not that, and someone just did that, like there's obviously gonna be a lot of confrontation. And like, I swear, I was signed a contract and I was like, you know what? I'm going to be like Mother Teresa when I come in there. What are you talking about? And like that busted out like after a day. So there's a lot that you don't see, but yeah, like I was insecure. I was pretty insecure about that, you know? And, you know, to give you some context too, you know, I could go into detail, but I'm sure there's a lot more questions, but Mildred was actually very insecure about Yoli during the show. And Yoli was in my top two. So like, it's just interesting how they have to fit a certain story narrative, you know? So it didn't fit the story narrative. So they,
so it just kind of didn't, it fell off. So like she was, you guys were close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So Yoli and I were close. You know, there was a physical attraction there, but you know, and I was on a date with Yoli like the very last night. And she was just like, hey, I was like, who else are you dating right now? Cause it was like one day before we had to choose our trial partners. And she was like, you know, I'm dating you and then my other person, Xander. But Xander's more of the safe choice between you two. And so it's interesting, right? How, and it goes back to what Mal was saying in like one of the interviews, like she just wants to live in like somebody, anybody, you know, because if I was more so like her not safe choice, but then like you just fall back on someone and then you've also fallen in love with that person. They had more of a dynamic for success. They both wanted to get married. So that made more sense. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the jealousy continued even after the show. Like Yoli and I had nothing but platonic, like, you know, relationship. So
yeah,
just interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Did you feel like, were you happy with the partner you chose? Would you pick a different trial partner if you were going to go back and do it again?
Yeah, I'm very happy with the person I chose because it was just Sam, because I wasn't romantically into anyone on the show. I just wasn't, you know, they legit have psychologists that match her personalities on this thing. It's not 10 random people they put in. They cohesively orchestrated these pairs to where you're supposed to have multiple matches in the show. But at the end of the day, paper can check off all the boxes, but your actual soul connection.
Yeah.
So I didn't have that with anyone. And the way I looked at it is, hey, you know, I guess between Yoli and Sam, if I don't find a romantic connection with any of them, you know, I want to use this time so I can learn about myself and like also help this other person grow, like maybe become better for the people that, you know, we go back to. And I found that with Sam, like Sam had such a gentle energy and just like, you know, that definitely that safe space that I could go to and just, you know, cause I was walking on eggshells like for 2-3 years in a very like back and forth relationship. And I just needed someone who had that energy. And believe it or not, again, this is all what you see, but you don't realize it, is that Sam actually picked Xander at the choice. But if you, cause it's not all like a 100% mutual match. You can pick somebody, but if they don't pick you, then they go back around the table, and the way then it's all plastered together is eventually it's a process.
So it looks like it's a perfect like one-to-one. I was thinking
I don't care if
like,
it takes 5 hours. Show me it.
I want to see the negotiation.
That filming day of the choice, that was a 6-hour filming session.
Jeez. I'd be like, I don't care who I pick. Just give me somebody. I want to go home. I'm out of here.
I know. I want to go home at this point. And, so wow. That's why I felt bad. You see me like crying at the choice and stuff, because I just didn't have an emotional connection with anyone. And I even talked to production about it. I'm like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong, because like, it seems like the way you guys are all hyping this up and briefing us every morning is that we're supposed to have these connections with people. And again, you don't know what's going on. I'm in this 10-day dating period, sequestered into a hotel, no phones, no this, no that, no access to the outside world. And I don't know, we have literally bodyguards blocking us from talking to our exes, talking to anyone. So everything is on, they want everything on camera. Yeah. So, I don't know if my ex is falling in love with somebody else. I don't know who's falling in love with people. Like, you don't know these things. So when you sit down at the table and at the choice, that's the first time you're actually like looking dead straight at your ex, aside from the cocktail. Little parties that you see.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I'm looking dead straight at my ex, and I don't know what the fuck is happening. Like, I don't know if she is actually, I mean, I didn't bank on it. You know, I think we had this thing that like, it kind of wouldn't happen, but you never know.
How involved are producers? Like, did they talk to you? Like, do they try to influence who you're choosing? Are they there as a sounding board? Like, what's their role in the show?
Yeah. So actually, like, from what the producers and keep in mind, this production was a team of over 300 people. It is a huge production. It's like, I didn't know any different. Right. I asked production, I'm like, is this big? They're like, dude, this is Love Is Blind, like big, like this is like a Hollywood like production. And, you know, from my understanding, from what they say is like, even the producers would tell me, like not the head executive VPs and everything, but like kind of like the field producers, they would talk to me and be like, this is really weird that we are supposed to guide you, but at the end of the day, like take a step back and not talk as much and not be in your face as much, because you are the one essentially. I mean, you have to be on topic. You can't, as you're going throughout the 8 weeks and decision day is getting closer and choice day is getting closer, you can't be talking about like Twinkies and what your favorite beer is, you know, like you can't just just let that guide the conversation. You actually have to be somewhat on topic. So it's within reason. But as far as manipulation, I would say soft. They can kind of prop up certain situations. They won't tell you what to do. They'll never tell you what to do. But if they know that you're feeling insecure about someone, let's just say, then they will set up an all group scene naturally and maybe let you and that other person come out first and hold off any of the cast members entering the room for 20 minutes, like things like that, you know, just little soft manipulation shit. They'll do that. So it's really hard to kind of like pinpoint it and like,
you might not even, right. You might not even realize when you're in it that what's happening. And Geneva, Geneva haven't really had a chance to dissect the show, but did you feel like Vanessa was the villain? Did she come off like the villain in person, as I feel like they tried to portray her?
Yeah. So I didn't spend that much time with her on the show. The only times you saw me with her was on that one date that you saw in the very beginning. It was 15 minute date we went on. That is it. We talked about bunions. I mean, like, that's what we talked about. You know,
flat no emotional bunions. Connection talking about bunions. What the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
Sexy.
And then the all cast events that you saw, you know, like three or four of those. As far as the show, that was it. I wasn't in that trio love triangle squared thing going on.
Yeah.
I was wife partner swapped with Aussie and Sam and Mildred. Like, we were just kind of off in this ether.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think just as human nature, it is pretty common for humans to be a little bit gullible when it comes to if seven of them are coming during this experience, you know, and being like, hey, Vanessa is this, Vanessa's that, Vanessa's doing this, this, that. So I kind of, to be honest, you know, it's my flaw, but I kind of believed it during the show, but there wasn't a lot of like instances. I didn't take anything personally, like, you know, Vanessa didn't have sex with Mildred, I could care less. You know, like there's nothing going on that affects me about Vanessa.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
So I was sort of indifferent. So I will say I felt a little type of way, you know, just because through what everyone else was saying, I believed it. But there was a little, you didn't see it on TV, but there was a little moment where I feel like I jumped in when everyone else did. And I kind of felt bad about it. You know, I'm like, damn, like, I don't even know this girl. Yeah. And it wasn't a huge deal, but I did feel bad about it. So after the show, I actually reached out to her because at the end of the day, like there's no playbook to how to navigate reality TV dating show. I think everyone did the best that they could, whether it was genuine or not, whatever, but did the best they could. And it's only a matter of months before this is all aired to millions of people. It's a lot on the mental psyche, you know? And so I reached out to her and I already knew she was gonna be the fucking villain. I already knew it. So like, I reached out to her and I was just like, hey, like, I'm just letting you know that day where I kind of jumped in you, like, I'm really sorry about that. Like, it wasn't my intention. She reached out back to me and she was like, hey, thank you so much. Like, no one's reached out to me. This means a lot to me. So from on, we actually developed a relationship and a friendship. And you know, I don't know exactly what, I was not a fly on the wall of everything that happened on that, because there was a lot of scenes where I was not on camera for, or, you know, on site for any of that stuff. But what I will say is that from what I've known of her personally post-show, she's been nothing but a good, kind friend, loyal, genuine, and such a bubbly, like just nice person. And I find it funny. The only thing I find is really interesting is that I think, you know, someone on the cast was saying like, oh, you know, Vanessa's just here to get famous and yada, yada. This girl had a travel vlog thing with her and Xander that she organically developed and had like 40,000 followers maybe. But, you know, after the show, she deleted that just like that. All of her following deleted it and just went out to like, the UK or to Europe and just found herself in Europe and like started her life all over again. And, you know, and, the same person that said that she was just doing shit for clout and everything, you know, wakes up one day and has, I don't know, like 800,000 followers.
Right. Right.
It just doesn't quite add up. That's just my opinion.
She did seem genuinely sad at the end. I feel
she was honest. It might not have been everyone's cup of tea, but she was honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Was it like not sweet revenge, but was it nice to see somebody else dealing with Mildred and running into issues
Right.
Like, how did that feel watching it? Like, because you probably didn't know during the time, but were you like, oh, fuck, it's not just me? Like, how did that feel watching that back?
It's really. And so this is going to fucking blow your mind. Post show, obviously, like when we were broken up and, you know, like, and then I watch it back and then I see the viewer's point of view coming in and all the feedback coming in. I'm not going to lie. My ego fucking loved it. Like, I'm like, all right, great. This is very validating, guys. Thank you so much. Because at the end of the day, I think our storyline is great, right? Because we have a toxic relationship. And in my head, 90% of the time, toxic relationships, there's usually one that tends to dominate for power and control. It just to the outside world that only sees 1% of it, it just looks toxic. So when you break us apart and put us with two different people, and me, I'm over here, you know, obviously having one fight initially, because it's like, you're a byproduct of who you are with someone for 2 years and you don't know how to settle down and yada, yada. And then boom. But aside from that, we had smooth sailing, like, you know, holding hands and dancing and like, la, la, la on the rainbow. But then you have contrast of, you know, someone like that. There is a common denominator. And I think that was Mildred of why she makes people go off the fucking rails. Yeah. It was really nice to watch that.
I was like so impressed with your ability. Scenario. Yeah, like your ability to not. There was a conversation between the two of you where she was like saying that she could never shut up because she's Latina or something, and was like, "I can never be quiet because I'm Latina," and like that's just it. And you were just like, "That is not the like." Just how calm you were. So how did you get there with somebody who's such an ineffective communicator? Like, how were you able to slow down and just like stay calm and not be like you're being ridiculous? Like, was that a learned trait? Like, what does that look like?
to be honest, it was my time with Sam. Although I didn't have a relationship with Sam, she made me become so self-aware of, I've always seen myself as a self-aware person, but not so much in relationships. And I never had boundaries in relationships. I didn't even know what the fuck those were. So like actually taking a step back, having breathing room for Mildred, having a sweet person come in and be like, hey, I think this is what's going on between you two. In my head, I'm always so humble to be like, what can I do better? What can I do better? And I'm like, so what if I become this person that is more calm and defense, you know, like not as defensive, because I was trained to be defensive by someone like this. Yeah. Let me see if I choose to be calm, if she still acts like this.
Right.
And because that, and she did. And that's how I was in the beginning of the relationship. I was very calm and this and that and that. And she would actually act for me like that. And then it gave me a reason to be more like hard and thick skinned. And, to go back to, you know, how you said, was it sweet revenge to see, you know, before, or as the show was airing, as the show was filming and we were in production, I heard very little bits of from Mildred of what was going on with Aussie, but we did end up texting each other a little bit. And this is the fucking crazy thing that is just like, what the fuck is that? She thought that, and again, I only see things from my side of view, but, you know, regardless of the toxicity, that's my girlfriend at the time, or what I guess, you know, sort of girlfriend at the time. And I knew this person for 2 years. I'm going to defend that person. I'm going to give that benefit person the benefit of the doubt. But she thought with full conviction that Aussie was discriminating her and being emotionally abusive towards her during filming, to the point where we had to get production involved, to get HR involved, and to actually, she was like, I'm forming a complaint of this, that, that. Looking back on it now, Aussie wouldn't hurt a fly. Aussie would just run. Before Aussie would emotionally abuse someone, they would just run. But, and I'm not saying that Mildred didn't feel that way. I'm sure that she did. And I'm sure that's what, how she felt. But there is that, what I didn't see at the time, the birthplace of that victim complex of where if you feel a certain way, you can turn it around and then make it look like someone's being like abusive. So again, that was validating too, because post show, I had to go to, you know, when I broke up with Mildred, I had to go to so much freaking therapy to get over narcissistic abuse. And so did Aussie. Aussie was so gaslit and so mind fucked during that experience. They had to go to like 3 months of therapy post show to actually handle what the hell just happened with how Mildred flipped the script, gaslit them, and just went like that. But at the time I didn't know Aussie. So I'm like, you must be doing this like to Mildred. That's why you see me at the changeover where we go back to original partners. You see me pouncing a little bit. You see this one sentence where I'm kind of pouncing on Aussie and I'm kind of like, well, why do you just walk out when times are hard? Like, you know, why do you, you know, is that what you're going to do, Sam? Like, you know, like I was thick skinned and like a soldier for Mildred at that point, because what I was hearing was that, and we sat down with production and apparently Aussie was emotionally abusive, but now that I know everything and see everything in hindsight, that couldn't be further from the truth. Like it's,
that's a shame. Cause Aussie already seemed like they were bringing a lot of baggage, you know, like Aussie's working through shit regardless of Mildred. So it's like, that is not a helpful, like how you got almost resolution and like support from your partner. It's like that, that was the opposite, which was really rough.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I actually talked to Lucy and I'm like, look, yes. Also you're dealing with their own problems. We're all dealing with their own problems. We're no different when it comes to relationships. Aussie wasn't romantically invested into Mildred. And Aussie has never been through something like that. So when you mix those two together, Aussie did something that I did not, and that Aussie expressed boundaries when I never did. That's the way I saw it. And some people picked up on the show. Other people saw Aussie as being a wuss, which I saw it during filming. But now looking back on it, I'm like, yes, you do run a lot. But at the end of the day, you being treated and gaslit like that during your experience, which during the trial marriage, it didn't make sense. Because again, these big shows, the reason why they're so successful is they consolidated into this 1%. And it's such a small world that people just debate and talk about so many different things over one little scene that doesn't represent the entirety of the relationship. So it was hard for them, the production, to like piece together what was really going on. And they couldn't, because it had to do with emotional abuse and discrimination. So alleged. So you see a little bathroom scene where, like, out of nowhere, they're acting weird. And then, like, you know, so that's all you get to see. But Aussie was expressing boundaries, and Aussie did what was best for them. And you don't see me execute that until the reunion, where I expressed boundaries and I just fucking left. I mean, there's literally no choice that anyone can do with that girl other than just, that's the way I look at it.
Was Netflix behind having Aussie leave, you think, since all that was happening, or was it all on her decision? Do you think they thought, hey, maybe you should leave since all this is happening during the trial marriage?
From my understanding, it was Aussie that was like, I don't know what, you know, because we all have a contract, you know, I can't talk too much about it, but like a contract where we have to stay. And if we want to leave, cash, dinero that we clearly don't have. So we really didn't have a choice. But the way that Aussie looked at it was, I don't know what I'm going to do, where I'm going to go, where I'm going to sleep. But all I know is that I cannot be with this girl anymore, because it's like affecting my mental health at this point.
Yeah, it was like,
Did they let you leave the reunion without any fight, or were they in the back saying, "Go get back out there"?
It's really interesting. So I left that whole reunion. The berating happened for 20 minutes straight. You only saw 5 minutes of it. It was 20 minutes SmackDown. And then when I was out crying, you know, like outside with Sam, that lasted another 30 minutes or so. I went back in the building after that. I did get a lot of producers come up to me one by one. I was still crying and yada yada. And they were like, I think this might be a good idea. It's your choice, but I think you going back out there will give you a voice, you know, like to that, you know, where you can speak your side of the truth. And they definitely gave me a choice, but the way I looked at it was, one, I am already going on stage with what I assume is my, like, what I say is my abuser, number one. So I already gave that a shot. It's not working. And two, I've been dealing with this for 3 years. This is a snapshot of my relationship for 3 years. This is another day in the office. It just hits different when it's being filmed in a room of 80 to 100 people in just a matter of months. It's going to be hitting millions of people. So that's why you see me having a shocked effect, because I'm like, as the stimulus was coming in, I'm like, holy fuck, like this is going to be shown to millions of people. Like, I am in like absolute shock. But you know,
that's a crazy thing. Yeah. It really is. How many people watch this?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was given a choice, but I said to them, I said, you know what? I've been dealing with this for 3 years. I said, I'm gaining my power back. My voice is to not be there, because this isn't my battle to fight anymore. Like, that's my voice. You know, kind of like when you say, like, when you don't say something, you're saying something.
No,
it was more powerful for you to, like, I thought it made more of a statement that you weren't, it wasn't Love and Hip Hop. You weren't like going back and forth with her, calling her a bitch and telling her, like, I think it came across stronger that you were just like, this is absolutely gaslighting and I'm fucking out of here. Because again, you can't, like, if you get in the dumpster with somebody like that, you're also in the dumpster, right? It's like, how do you,
and more real. Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, I broke up with her in like September 2022 or whatever. Clearly she had, we went no contact for 4 or 5 months before the reunion. You would assume that we would be more peaceful, and I had nothing but peaceful things, you know, like going at her. I just wanted to get the fucking reunion over with. But because I think of the whole DV case, she saw that as like, holy fuck, I'm going to look horrible. So before Tiff says it, before anyone says it, which I wasn't even planning to bring it up, she's going to shoot herself in the own foot, and I'm going to like do this, this, and make Tiff, you know, paint out to be this horrible person. I think it was just more, she was planning that shit for like, I think for a good four months, like she already knew what she was doing. And it's just a shame. I just wanted it to be over with, frankly.
Have you guys talked since the reunion?
No, we were like invited to a Netflix party for like pre-Pride or something. So we were in the same room, but you know, I just don't, my theory is that if The way I look at it is, let's just say that everything, all the accusations at the reunion were true. Everything she said. If my fiance or whatever was Sam, I don't think she would have expressed it like that. Right. And yeah. Number two, it's a real, real smear campaign when someone uses a platform such as the reunion episode to shout out to the world of millions of people information that no one knows at the end of the day, whether it's true or not mm-hmm. true. The only people that know that actually what happened is going to be Mildred and I. And if someone can use that as a weapon to shift people's thinking over information that no one knows at the end of the day is true or not true, mm-hmm. That is pure manipulation, gaslighting, and mm-hmm. using that as a weapon to, quite frankly, save her ass. And, you know, it doesn't take a person with a lot of brains to figure that out. And I feel like anyone sitting down on their couch has ever been through a similar situation with an ex-partner. They immediately related to me just like that.
Oh yeah.
And I think honestly that, yeah, she pulled a Latina card. And I also think that she pulled the mom card because again, in these reality TV shows, you only see a snapshot. And I came onto that reunion listening to my gut and saying, hey, number one, I'm not going to lie. And number two, I'm going to take accountability where it's needed. But number three, like I'm a huge believer in karma, and my gut and my instinct was screaming during that reunion, do not throw her dirty laundry out there.
Yeah.
And do not go down to her fucking level. And that's why you saw, as soon as I started yelling about the sex board games and all that crazy shit, I was like, what the, like I started losing it. That's when I left.
Yeah.
That's when
yeah.
I left.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was proud of
good.
You.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's good to have control like that because like that's what you know, people like that are trying to get a reaction out of you, and like you didn't give that to her in the way she wanted. And
you could see what was happening.
Yeah, yeah. I think everybody saw. So we gotta go back then. How did we actually get to a proposal? Like, what happened?
Yeah. It's interesting. If I was never on a TV show, I don't think I would have proposed. The reason why I say that is that everyone comes in to that show with different reasons as to why they are not getting engaged yet. Our particular situation was just communication. So when you add that, communication was the main reason. When you add that into a production bubble mm-hmm. in full-time production, where for instance, on any given day, we could wake up, Mildred and I could film a day in the life in the apartments for 2-3 hours. Before that, we're talking, briefing our producers about what happened the day before, how it made us feel, how this, it's like talk therapy. Then we talk mm-hmm. about a situation in that filming session. Then afterwards, we do what's called on the fly interviews, where it's kind of like we're on set. We're not in the confessionals, but we're like actually in this apartment saying things. And then later on that day, we, you know, then do a set where we go out with half the cast members out to dinner. We're talking about in the group about what happened earlier that day. In there.
Oh my gosh.
And then later we're, you know, then talking about a producer or field producer one-on-one. And then later on, we have a filming session for 2 hours in the interview room where we go over all of that. And then after the cameras are down, Mildred and I go back to our apartments and we're talking about our actual relationship at that point. So when I say there's this level of self-awareness that comes through these processes in an 8-week period, and you also have cameras constantly on you. Do you forget the cameras are there? Sometimes, not always. Most of the times, no. There's a certain level of self-awareness, but also where you want to be yourself. And I don't cookie cutter shit. Like I just like to say how it is. And when you have a producer that's holding your hand, and you know, multiple producers holding your hand and saying, "Hey, you know what? Yesterday, you guys were kind of rocky when it came to what you agreed on finances. Today, let's talk a little bit about that. And just like, what are you going to do moving forward? How are you going to find a solution? Talk about your solution today mm-hmm. and how that's going to look like moving forward, or whether that's going to make or break you, like things like that. So with that being said, when it's all about communication is the reason why we don't want to get married. I actually truly with full conviction believed that Mildred and I had our communication efforts down for the most part. Yeah. You see little highlighted moments and scenes where it looks like we didn't, But outside of that, 95% of our conversations were great and we were communicating great. You know, like imagine you and your partner for 4 weeks.
Or just forced to talk about every single thing in depth.
Yeah, yeah. And 1% of those conversations, you're going to be like, well, what is this? And that 1% moment was the Latina scene, was this scene, was that scene. But other than that, I mean, Mildred was just going back to our baseline personality at that point. But like, other than that, we were pretty good. So I believed we were good. So yes, I proposed 7 days after we proposed and we came back. Within 7 days, it went back right to the same exact thing. She took her ring off 7 days later when we got into a fight. And that's why I was like, I'm not going to get engaged to you and have you break up with me like you always do this entire time. I didn't realize that that in itself was abusive. Just breaking up with someone, discarding someone, breaking up with someone, discarding someone. Like I that was just normal to me. So it went back to 7 days and here, and we went right back into the same cycle, but now we're just engaged. Like it was nuts.
Oh God.
Do you think if you never went on this show, you guys would have just, would you still be in the relationship or you think it would have ended? Or
that is a really, really interesting question. And I mean, of course we don't know really, but I guarantee you the relationship probably would have went on a significant amount of time. It was through my experiences, just the timeline of different things, where I actually chose to end a relationship. I mentally ended the relationship about 2 to 3 months before I actually broke up with her. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it all started one day when she called me a narcissist. I've never been called that before. I didn't even know what it was. I've heard Donald Trump was a narcissist and that's about it. So I was just kind of like, what is that? And I looked it up. And I didn't have narcissism education, like borderline personality disorder. Like I didn't know about any of those things or what makes an emotionally abusive relationship. Do we all have traits of that? Absolutely. That's what I learned later. But I'm like, that's interesting. So in me Googling, am I one?
You found out actually.
To be honest, I laugh about it now.
Trump pops up. You're like, oh, hell no.
I laugh about it now, but what I'm telling you, when I actually read those things and I read about what reactive abuse was and why I felt triggered to yell, because we would get in fights and eventually got to a point where I'm like, what the fuck? You know, and I would like yell back because I'll get triggered so much. And then she would flip that shit and just be like, look at you. Like you yell too. You're a coward. You say, she's called me in my experience, right? In my experience, she's called me thousands of names. I may have called her 6 names ever. It took 2 years to call her a name back. She'll never forget those 6 names, like 6 names ever, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, what? So it's, I laugh at it now because I'm just so healed and I'm so like thriving in my life. But I'm telling you, when I first found out what it was like, I just started bawling, crying my eyes out, like out of, I don't know, like relief or knowing that I wasn't crazy, because I was always looked out to be like this crazy one relationship. Yeah. It's kind of like having all these symptoms of your body and you don't know why you're feeling unwell. And then all of a sudden you finally get like a diagnosis or like, hey, you know what? You have Parkinson's or you have thyroidism. And although that's scary and you're just like, you know, but there's a sense of relief that's kind of like, it has a name. And let's work to find a solution to how we can like fight this thing, get rid of this thing, something. Yeah. And that's exactly what it was with Mildred. I was like, so I talked to my therapist and I was like, I need an exit plan ASAP.
Yeah.
And it took 2 months to get out.
You had to call the police on her at one moment, right? And has anyone else had to call the police on her in her life, or has it ever happened in your relationship before that?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, I don't think anyone's called the police on Mildred before. I wouldn't know though, but no, I mean, I've never had the police called on me and I've never called the police on anyone else ever in any of my other relationships. And it's really interesting dynamic. You know, most people are, you know, sympathetic towards everything that's happened, but because I'm a more masculine presenting person and that person is Mildred's more feminine, there's this weird, interesting like dichotomy that like I never really even processed or even thought about until post-show, until I get everyone's reactions. And that includes Mildred even being on the reunion to begin with. They're like, if Mildred was more masculine, was male, and I was a feminine woman, would Mildred haven't even been able to be on the show, on the reunion? And on top of that,
That
DV case have been kind of like more, because the way I look at it, a lot of people that don't understand queer relationships, they might see it as me just being a masculine person and her being feminine. So I did get a lot of messages that were just like, was it really that bad to where you had to call? And it's just crazy because I would have never gotten that message if Mildred was the one that got hit. I don't think Mildred would have ever gotten that message. So it's just interesting, but you now have a lethal weapon, a 30-pound dog gate being thrown at you at the top of a staircase that's 15 stairs below. My mom has multiple sclerosis. Her balance is really off. If that would have been hit mother at the top of the stairs, she would have fallen down and busted her head open on the wooden floor. So yes, it's that serious because had I lost balance, it would have,
crack your head and anything can happen.
Yep. And, this is a little insider that I didn't really like put out there. I released a YouTube video that's like my side of the story. And I talk like 30 minutes about everything that happened, post show of like what I would have actually said. But long story to go back into the whole Yoli Mildred thing, on the police report itself, it says that in Mildred's own testimony was saying that, hey, we were on recently on a reality show and we were arguing about someone who may or may not currently still be in our lives right now. And she was referring to Yoli. She actually threw the dog gate on me because she thought I was cheating on her with Yoli, which is the most mind-blowing thing because it doesn't match the storyline at all on the show. Right. And the own police report says that. And it's just, and that's where like the whole thing at the reunion, when like Yoli jumped on me at the reunion, Yoli and I were fine. And we talked like weekly for like a year after the show. She actually didn't talk to Mildred really much at all. Mildred felt very insecure about her, but about 3-4 days before the reunion, I got I told Yoli, I'm like, Netflix is requesting the police report. I'm just letting you know, this is what the police report says. But she knew that it was about her because I called her about it like the day it happened. Mm-hmm. Her demeanor just changed. So the only thing I can think of is that she may have talked to Mildred maybe 3-4 days before the reunion.
Cause her vibe at the reunion was like, she was going to Mildred to see if she was okay. And like checking in with her, like
earlier that week, Yoli and I were on the phone for 8 hours, just chit-chatting about life, and we were fine. So like the flip something happened. Clearly her and Mildred talked, and Mildred has this nice way of really manipulating situations. And, it's just interesting. Yoli and I go a year and a half of being friends, talking at least once a week and her not speaking one word with Mildred. And then all of a sudden 3 days before the reunion, her and I have a phone call real quick. And I'm like, hey, Yoli, this is what's on the police report. And then her whole entire voice sounded so fucking different. I'm like, something's off. Yeah. Something's weird. Boom.
Have you guys talked since then?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. I mean, she showed you people show you who they are. And like,
she was on she did a interview 2 weeks before the show aired. We all did an interview with Tudum, which is like Netflix's press. And she says in that article that she was like siding with Mildred because she said that Tiff was instigating the entire conversation. And I'm just looking at it and I'm kind of like, I didn't even say
that's messed up
word. I was like, were we at the same reunion? Like, I didn't even say a word. Like, what are you talking about?
But chucking a gate down at you.
And if you saw in the reunion, real quick, in the reunion, when Mildred missed, she throws a dog gate on me. This is where it gets weird. And I think it pieces together a lot of context of what I just said to you. At the reunion, you see Mildred admitting that she was throwing a dog gate on me. And then you'll hear me say, so you admit that because the police report didn't. And as soon as I said that, talking about the police report, Yoli shuts me up and she's like, let her finish talking. Didn't she just say that? So like, I think that Yoli did not want me to, and I wasn't planning to, but again,
right.
It's like, what does Yoli have to do with it? Right. She actually did have something to do with it. I wasn't planning to bring it up, but they were both trying to shut me out to make sure that I wasn't. And honestly, I wasn't even planning to bring any of that up, but Mildred and Yoli clearly did mean girl shit. And it both shot them back in the foot. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I know you all cover reality TV. This is my, I have a question for y'all. Do you feel like recently in reality TV world, like maybe the last 5 years, I feel like back in the day, people used to glamorize and glorify assholes on reality TV. Now I feel like it's the other way around. Like everyone, because social media, everyone shits on the mean people now.
Yeah,
that's my theory. Like, I feel like that happens a lot.
It does happen. Yeah. And then I think secretly there's still people who like love them, but you definitely saw that with Love is Blind. And what was her name? The one everybody hated, Irina.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Well, and yeah. I mean, people love to hate a woman too, but she obviously has issues allegedly. We'll say she'll probably listen to this and then send us a,
all right, we have random
letter, but
questions.
Sorry,
about the cast. That. Yeah, that's rough. Which is, if you're on an island, you're on a desert island, you're picking one person to go with you to survive. Who are you taking?
To survive?
Like, you guys are going to be alone in it together.
You know, not for friendship reasons, but for just like, I need you to survive. It's going to be Lexi, for sure.
Oh. Okay.
For sure. Lexi is very competitive. And when she means business, she means business. Like, so she's going to be like, look, I got the fire. I'm going to start the fucking fire. But like, bitch, I will fuck you up if you don't go out there and find the fish. Like, I'm telling you right now. And then like, she'll come back and then like, she'll have like a blazing bonfire just to prove to me that she can start the bonfire. So I'm like, okay, that's someone I could rely on.
That's great.
And it was nice to see her get angry and kind of act human.
Yeah, it was. All right, fuck, marry, kill Vanessa, Sam, Lexi.
Oh god. Like, I mean, Vanessa's my friend, but I would think out of them two, I would fuck Vanessa.
Okay.
Lexi's too tall for me. And like, she's like 5'10". And I like short girls, like shorter people.
Okay.
And then Xander's like just mask, and I don't know. I just don't like more masculine. Like, you know, so I guess type wise, maybe Vanessa. So if I Vanessa, we might have to be blindfolded and on drugs, but it happens, but,
good time.
But okay. Fuck.
And then you have two more, marry or kill.
We're killing Sam.
Oh yeah. So this is, Vanessa, Sam, and what, who
Lexi.
Else? And Lexi. I would marry Lexi. Or sorry. I would marry Sam. I would marry Sam.
Okay.
And I think I would kill Vanessa.
Okay. Okay. So you're fucking and killing the same person? The double?
No, fucking Vanessa.
Okay.
sorry. This is my question. This is turning out bad.
Fucking Vanessa, marrying Sam, killing Lexi. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Good. Would love to know, we'll maybe ask, like, I would love to know, are you dating? Are you in a position where you feel ready to date? Like, what's your, it sounds like you've done a lot of therapy. How are you feeling now about?
Yeah. Well, like first getting out, you know, after leaving the relationship, I thought I was ready for dating within a couple months, but then I realized I'm not, because I'm still healing from a relationship that I had no idea, not romantically healing, but narcissistically abusive healing. Yeah. I didn't realize I was projecting that onto my own relationships, like my new relationships at that point. I was like, oh, I'm not ready. And I had a lot of inner work to do. You know, right now I'm dating, but I'll just kind of keep it at that. I don't think I'm ready for a whole new bust the doors wide open.
You're not going situation. Season two?
yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I think my entire love life and the raunchiness of it got busted wide open. In ways that I think a lot of other reality relationship cast members have not. I mean, if you think about it, if you look at all these shows, to actually see an intimate relationship like this and at the reunion bring up like domestic violence, emotional abuse, and like even her smear campaigns on TikTok afterwards, after the show aired. I mean, it's just, it's nonstop and it's just exhausting, but like, that took a toll on me of like how, I got 90%, 95% good feedback, but I mean,
still a lot. Yeah, to take in.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. So I think I'm just kind of like chilling right now.
Are you like popular when you go out? Like, are people approaching you? Like, has that changed in your life? Like, are people definitely coming up a lot? Yeah,
definitely. It will definitely happen. I mean, depending on where I am, right? It'll definitely happen once a day. If I'm in Hillcrest, which is like the neighborhood of San Diego, I mean, it's like every 30 feet, but like,
that's great.
If I walk into the lesbian bar, which is called Gossip Grill here, it's every Gossip 20 Grill.
Seconds. That's great. I love it.
Yeah.
I love
Gossip Grill.
So what's your type?
It's definitely like feminine. You know, I'm more masculine, so I date more feminine. Like longer hair, darker features. But I think like just like very adventurous, very genuine, but I don't know, just free spirited, I think is where I was. And it's interesting because I look back on Mildred and it's like physically she matches those, but like emotionally, like not at all. Like it's weird. I think I was just guilt tripped into like
You deserve like lightness in your next relationship. I hope you get it. Like fun.
Have you ever dated someone who's more masculine? It seemed like the three, I don't want to say something rude, the three more masculine people on the show seem like the nicest people. And do you think that that would be a good match for you if you force yourself to try it? Okay. I got to have the hotness. Yeah.
I don't know who would be in the world we call tops and bottoms. Like, you know, I just don't even know what I would even do. Like I would, you know, it's kind of like if I were to have sex
tops
with
and bottoms, I forget about all that. Right.
Yeah.
I would have sex with a man. So I'm a what's called a gold star. So I've never had sex with a man ever in my
life.
We
were going to ask you that. Okay. You're a gold star.
I touched the penis one time. It felt like pulling hard bubble gum. It was weird. It was like hard, but soft.
Penises
the skin
are wild.
There was
just, uncircumcised and
I don't even know.
Coming out around the corner.
I didn't even know. I didn't look at it. I would never know. It was dark. Not the penis was dark. It was dark.
I was at the Titanic movie.
but like, I don't even know what to do if I like was.
How old were you when you first realized that you liked women, and who was your first woman crush on TV or something?
So I realized I was, I didn't conceptualize it, but looking back on it, I realized I was attracted to women as early as 4 years old. Wow. I was in preschool. And I would always play with the boys in preschool. Like we would play like the little shooting games and the cops and robbers and like all of that stuff. And I remember, you know, we would all the boys would play a game where we would have just like little handguns and kind of like shoot each other on a battlefield. And I remember purposely getting shot. So I would lay on the ground so I could then call out for the girl nurses to come up to me and give me attention and assess what's going on and kind of like, you know, like touch my shoulder. Like you got shot in the shoulder. Like, oh no, like
you're like the Sandlot.
Exactly. The Sandlot. And, you know, with peppercorn.
Squints.
And, I just remember liking that. So it was kind of like reversing.
That's a good tactic. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. I picked up girls as early as that. Everything's been going downhill ever since.
You should try it today. Just pass out in the street. You know, you never know. Right. Come.
Yeah. So what's next for you? Like, what do you have going on next that you're excited about in your life?
Yeah. I mean, for the next few months, I mean, it's, they say it's Pride Month. It's really Pride season, Pride summer. So I mean, San Diego Pride's coming up here in 5 days. I'm hosting events for that. I got a lot of stuff coming up for that, and then I'm going to do Long Beach Pride, and then I'm going to do Pride, and I just got back from Palm Springs, did Denver Pride, and I have going flying out to do like Phoenix Pride, and you know, so and I think maybe Austin Pride. So it's kind of like we're going like on a lesbian world tour right now.
Yes, I love that. That's great.
Just getting paid to like hook up in events and stuff.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I'm gonna have that in the pipeline. Obviously I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna deny it. I'm stepping somewhat into the social media influencing world, but I just want to make sure.
Why not?
I'm not gonna sugarcoat the shit and say I'm not doing it. I am. I think who wouldn't, right? But
why the fuck not?
But I just want to make sure that what I do is authentic to me. And then because of the very unique opportunity that I have as far as queer representation in the media and it being reality TV, not just an actor, you know, that plays an imperative role with helping to bridge the gap into normalcy, into how conservative straight people may view people who are queer. And like, I, you know, I'm not left leaning, I'm not right leaning. Like, I just see people for people. And I think that, like, at the end of the day, there is a lot of like, people need to let their guards down and just come to an understanding. And I hope my, whatever I do with my life and moving forward as being a public figure, I hope to like help bridge the gap, whether it's through comedy, whether it's through, you know, like activism, whatever it is, whatever it looks like. I just think that me specifically and 9 other people, well, maybe not one of them, but 8 other people have this unique opportunity to be themselves to the point where other people can feel safe to do so as well, and help bridge the gap with just mainstream society.
That's nice. What did it mean like for, I mean, I'm assuming you've gotten a lot of love from the queer community. Like, what do you think the impact of like seeing this show on Netflix is like for the community, like you mentioned?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think the impact is huge, right? Like, this isn't some like mini docuseries that's on YouTube or like something random. I mean, this is the king of like reality TV, or one of the top dogs of reality TV, which is kinetic content, you know, Love is Blind, Married at First Sight. Like, these are huge shows, and it's on the largest streaming platform. So this wasn't a lesbian show. This was actually a mainstream show who had a successful, you know, season one. And if you think about it, I think it shows that there's not a lot of, not a lot of differences between season one. I mean, but I just think it helps like for that person that's sitting in bumfuck Alabama that, you know, just ran, you know, on their dirt bike through the cornfields, and when they go home and take a shower and they're sitting on their couch and they scroll through and just so happens that Ultimatum Queer Love pops up, that they're going to sit down, maybe fetishize lesbianism, but at the same time sit down and be like, oh shit, they're not that much different than me and Betty over here.
100%. You know? Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think like what we said to you before is like, it also shows, I think it just shows people who are not ignorant or who just might not have the information, how similar, like you said, like all relationships are similar, no matter who's in them. The issues are the same. The communication is the same. I mean, I think the communication was better for you all than the average person, but just like that, they really, you get to see like this shit is the, like, just seeing that it's normal and it's the same. And like, I think that exposure is sometimes all it gets built up for people. And so like, just simply watching it, like you said,
and that's with anything. It's not just with queer stuff. I mean, you know, like, I mean, with anything, like, what, in the 1930s or something, you couldn't even like say that you're pregnant or have like look pregnant on TV. I mean, so it just, it always starts with something pretty audacious.
To Switzerland to have the baby, and then you gave it to
So I think it just, you know, audacious things and movement and changes happen in society, and it usually starts in entertainment. And you know, that's kind of like a monumental, like how do I say it, like frontier kind of like thing that they're navigating right now. And I hope that more stuff is to come, other than just, you know, the Ultimatum. I'm sure more stuff is going to follow because they saw the success. I mean, yeah, we hit number 2 in US, but there were multiple countries in the world where we hit number 1. So,
It didn't hit. It was a great show. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, it was number 2 in the US and Netflix. We got beat out by Manifest, with that show Manifest or something, number 1. God. But I mean, we were number 1 in Canada, number 1 in Germany. I mean, just all the shows, period. Not just queer shows, just shows, you know? Yeah. Number 1 in Australia.
Have you watched yourself in another language, like where they dub over your voice? Have you watched that?
So, okay, so it's funny. I've dubbed it over in, and I think it was the German one. They made me have an actual, it was a female voice, but they made me have a more androgynous, lower voice.
Oh, and really?
I was like,
you're sexy. Like, this is hot. I like how I sound.
No, 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 no. Like, you know, it was a woman's voice, but it was like a deep, like kind of, you know, good. Like, that's so fucking cool.
Who's the person doing the voiceover? Yeah.
I know, right?
What a job. We appreciated getting a chance to talk to you and like just hearing more about your experiences.
Thank you so much.
We thought you really were so authentic on the show.
I appreciate it.
Really excited to
see. You have a sweet kindness about your face that you don't find in a lot of reality stars. Most people on TV are really dead in the face, and you were alive. We've watched so much TV, and that's what I say to Geneva all the time. Like, people are not alive. You're alive, and it's nice to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was live. I would think it was just because it was a very emotional experience.
Yeah.
And I'm alive, but I feel lots of high ups and high downs. And it was a lot to unpack during that show, but I just can't be anything other than myself. And what myself was during that 8-week experience was going through all the fucking feels. And I can't ignore them. Like some other people absolutely. Can hold that off right on camera as I can. So
yeah, absolutely. All right. Shout out your socials where everybody can follow you and find you. Because we'd love for people.
Right now I'm just rocking with basically Instagram and TikTok, which are both tiff.ddr. And that's it. Yeah.
Are you gonna be on Threads next? That's where all the people are going.
I am on Threads now.
Signed Geneva and I up today. So.
Oh, you did? Oh, great. Who knew?
Yeah,
we're on
or Thread.
Do you think it's gonna like take off?
I do, because it's connected to Instagram and it's part of the conspiracy.
Yeah, the fact that it's connected to Instagram. And that can really help, you know, if you have like a link in your profile and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Start everything.
More conversations and more dialogue, more this.
Yeah.
And that can really help people, like whatever industry they're in, like gain customers or followers or viewers and like all that. Yep. So.
And I guess if you want to get rid of it, you have to delete your Instagram. So they really.
No, I actually found out today.
Oh, it's a lie?
Yeah. Today, there is a way that you can do it. You actually click, if you go on your Instagram, you click on the number itself now, that little number.
Okay.
And it will say, hide it from your Instagram now. So now you can.
Oh, pro tip. Okay. All right. Well, Tiffany, take care. We're going to find you in San Diego. We're going to find you at a bar. You'll see us one day down. In the wild.
I drive a minivan, so you'll be like, I don't know who that girl is.
Yeah.
Gotta go. Thanks, Tiffany. We really enjoyed speaking to you.
Sure. Take care.